Good morning once again. Thanks so much for joining us here at Next Level Church Online. My name is Joseph McMurray, and I'm the teaching pastor here at Next Level Church. I'm excited this morning to share with you our fifth and final installment of the series that we have been walking through together for the past few weeks called Fail Forward. And today, I want to talk with you about a way that you can fail forward when it comes to the relationships that you have in your family, your marriage, your kids. And what I'll share today is definitely not limited to people who are married with children. In fact, I think that what I'll share today applies in just about every relationship in your life. Now, those of you who are dads like I am, or those of you who have dads, what's the most important thing to dads when it comes to traveling, as in road trips? What's most important? Is it safety? Is it fuel mileage? No. We all know what the most important thing to dads is. It's making good time. Essentially, making good time means arriving at our destination early or ahead of schedule because we didn't waste time making unnecessary stops. Am I right? As a dad, traveling is all about making good time. So, roughly 10 years ago, I took my three boys to visit my parents who live in Georgia, just south of Atlanta. And I can't remember why my wife, Lisa, wasn't able to make the trip, but I was doing a brave thing as a dad and taking my boys on this trip by myself. It's about a five-hour drive with normal stops. No problem. So I've got three boys across the back seat of a Ford sedan, one on the seat, one in a booster, one in a high back booster. And the trip to Georgia was relatively uneventful. In true dad fashion, we made pretty good time. See, the secret to making pretty good time with three boys in the back seat is pull-ups. You can sail from South Charlotte to just south of Atlanta when the two younger kids are in pull-ups. So we make the drive, we make good time, we spend a couple of days with Mimi and Pawpaw, and then it's time to head back to Charlotte. Now, the problem was that with my wife not a part of the trip and her incredible organizational skill, I significantly underestimated the number of pull-ups that I would need to pack. By the time it was time to head back home, we were out of pull-ups. Now, if I'm honest, today, 10 years later, if we were in this situation, I'd probably just go buy a box of pull-ups and we'd be on our way. But at that time, 10 years ago, a box of pull-ups was not in the budget, or what Pastor Doug last week referred to as a spending plan. A box of pull-ups was not in the budget, especially when we already had a box of pull-ups at home. So I thought, you know what? It's no big deal. We can still make good time. We'll just handle this matter the way it was handled when I was a kid. It's all boys in the car. We got this. Now, out of respect for my boys, who are all three teenagers today, I will spare the details of the incident that occurred. However, as we are cruising 70 miles per hour along I-85 North, it became clear that someone in the back seat had lost control. And it was at that point that I, too, lost control. Now, I didn't lose control of the car, don't worry. Because of what was going on in the back seat, I lost control of my temper. I began yelling, as though yelling at the kids was going to help the situation of someone having lost control in the back seat, as though it was going to help in any way, shape, or form. Man, I was yelling. And I'll tell you what happened next in just a minute, but before I do, I want to share a concept that applies to all of us when we are met with conflict, when we're met with anger, particularly in our families. But listen, it could apply elsewhere as well. One of the biggest problems in handling conflict is that we just don't see it modeled very well. For many of us, our families didn't handle conflict very well, or currently don't handle conflict very well. And in an age of social media and reality TV, we watch shows that thrive on massive amounts of drama. We may even take our cues on how to deal with conflict from shows where producers lock people in a house just to see what will happen. And there's name calling, and there's fist fighting, and hair pulling, and drink throwing. And it's entertaining and ridiculously dysfunctional. And honestly, for some of us, we don't even need reality TV to witness unhealthy responses to conflict, because our own families are prime examples of how not to treat each other. It may not look like a reality show, but chances are that unless we've put in some intentional work on behavioral management, our reaction to conflict isn't great. If you don't believe me, I want to suggest that you attend a middle school baseball game. Because any number of things could happen that lead to people, middle schoolers and adults alike, behaving badly. At the root of almost every reaction to conflict is anger. Anger is what makes reality TV, oh, and by the way, middle school baseball, so exciting. One simple disagreement turns into a brawl on the front lawn. Anger is interesting to watch from a distance, but in real life, it can make us completely unhealthy if we don't learn how to handle it well. I want to share with you four different responses to conflict within a family, and I want you to look at these and see which one of these you relate to as it pertains to anger. The first one is the Incredible Hulk. Some sort of disagreement comes up, and immediately your blood pressure rises. You start to sweat. The veins in your neck start to pulsate like you're the Incredible Hulk. And if you've ever watched Dude Perfect, this is the example of the rage monster, the Incredible Hulk. The next one is the stuffer. This person deals with anger by backing off and distancing yourself from other people. The stuffer, if you're one of these, you let your mind just stew on whatever it is that's bothering you. And when someone asks you what's wrong, you respond the same way every time. Nothing. But inside, you're just boiling and the anger is festering. The third one is the everything's great person. You hate conflict so much that you will do just about anything to avoid it, including denying that it even exists. You totally ignore it and brush it under the carpet so that you don't have to deal with it at all. And then the fourth response is the stealth attacker. Like denying conflict, you pretend that everything is fine, even to the person who hurt you. But when they're not around, you immediately find subtle ways to talk about them behind their back and make them look bad in front of others and win people over to your side. This is a classic passive-aggressive move. And perhaps one day, when they least expect it, you'll bring that conflict back up and throw it right in their face. Now, what I learned about myself was something that I already knew, but what became blatantly obvious on that drive home from Georgia with my boys is that I am the Incredible Hulk. I don't mean to be, but in my flesh, in my natural state, I will respond to conflict like a monster. Blood boiling, veins popping, loud yelling, out of control. And that's exactly what happened on that car ride, I'm ashamed to say. I flipped out over something that really could have been avoided if I wasn't just trying to make good time. If I had been a little wiser and made better decisions for myself and for my family, it could have been avoided. It was ultimately my fault that we had the incident in the car. So I pulled off at the next exit, and I got everything and everyone cleaned up after the incident we shall not discuss. And in the midst of all of that, I realized what a monster I had been. I scared my boys. I mean, they're 8, 6, and 4, and their dad is flipping out over a ridiculous, dumb situation. They were legitimately scared. My reaction to something so small was so ridiculous, so outrageous. These little guys were terrified. And so I got everyone out of the car, and we huddled up. And I apologized to these boys for the way that I had acted. And I told them that I knew I had been acting like a beast. See, when it came to being a loving father and setting a good example for my kids, in that moment, I failed. I looked all three of those boys in the eyes, and right there, I made a vow to them and to God that I would never again unleash the beast. Now, you'd have to ask them for confirmation, and they'll tell you. But to the best of my knowledge, I have not lost control of my anger in such a way since that day. Have I been angry again? Of course. But by the Spirit of God in me and by the memory of the looks on their terrified faces, I've found a way to fail forward, to respond to that anger without losing control or losing my cool or becoming the beast that I never want to see again. When it comes to marriage and family, these relationships, when they're healthy, they simply make things better. They give us joy. They give us purpose. They're the reason we do what we do. But isn't it true that those same relationships that make life so enjoyable can also be very difficult at times? See, if you get close enough to anybody, there is bound to be conflict. Our spouses or significant others, other family members, these are the people who we are most likely to have conflict with because these are the people who are closest to us. That's just reality. But there's some sort of lie out there that says that in a good relationship with your spouse or with your family, there won't be any fighting. Listen, I don't believe that. In fact, I don't think that conflict destroys our relationships. I believe that it's our response to conflict that destroys relationships. It's all about how we handle it. So I want you to think about the last argument that you had, either with your spouse or someone else in your family. Think about the last fight that you had with another person that you're related to. In that moment, there's no manual, there's no instruction booklet that says, here is how you perfectly handle this situation. No, you're left to deal with it the best way you know how. And that means you probably deal with it one of two ways. Number one, you deal with it the way that it has been modeled for you. Basically, you deal with conflict the way your family dealt with conflict or the way your family deals with conflict. Even if you've never thought about it, there's a good chance that you respond to arguments or conflicts the same way one of your parents does or did, because that's what was modeled. Or the second way is you respond the same way as the person on the other side of the conflict. However they act, that's how you're going to act. If they yell, you yell. If they get sarcastic, you get sarcastic. If they take to social media, you do too. No matter what the fight was about and no matter which way you choose to respond, I would venture to say that at the end of the day, you thought you were right and the other person was wrong. Right? The reality is that when it comes to conflicts in our lives, we just love to be right. We're fighting, we're arguing to prove that we're right, to prove our point. And usually the point that we're making is blatantly obvious to us. Something like, He's too controlling. Or she shouldn't have done that. She shouldn't have said that. Or he doesn't listen to my side of the story. It could be any number of things. But the problem is, the more we fight to be right, or the more that we fight to prove that we're right, the more our relationships suffer. And after we've made our point, even if we do end up convincing someone else that we're right, we're left with nothing but pain and regret and confusion. And ultimately, we fail. So what do we do about it? The good news is, if you really get what we're talking about today, I believe that it will set you up to fail forward, to change the way you view conflict forever. The Apostle Paul, whom we have spoken of many times in this series, and we talk about him all the time because he wrote the majority of what we call the New Testament. While he was in prison in Rome, the Apostle Paul wrote a letter to a church in a town called Ephesus. And the church in Ephesus was having a hard time getting along. Imagine that. There were people involved, so there must have been conflict. They were having a hard time getting along, not because they were bad people, but because sometimes it's just hard to get along with people. We get that. And in a section where Paul addresses their conduct, he's talking about their behavior with one another. He talks about how to handle conflict. And the thing that I love here is that even though Paul is writing to a group of Christians and he uses this kind of Christian language, what he's saying is applicable to all people, everyone, whether you call yourself a Christian or not. You can benefit from what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 3. I'm going to read it to you. Here's what it says. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There are a couple other verses that precede this one that I'll read at the very end of our talk today, but I really just want us to focus on this one. The first thing Paul says is make every effort. Giving all our effort isn't a problem for us. It's just that we usually put all of our effort toward winning an argument, toward proving that we're right and they're wrong, toward making a point. It's not that we put all of our effort toward making peace. Paul speaks of something different. Paul speaks about throwing all of our effort into something different. What are we making an effort to do? To keep the unity of the Spirit. Now, unity may not seem like that big of a deal, but it is. Being unified creates stronger relationships and healthier people. Constantly being at odds with the people around us only makes us weaker. It makes us overly defensive and just generally unhappier. Paul is saying that instead of fighting against a person, we should be putting our effort toward fighting for peace. In fact, Paul says it's through the bond of peace that we keep peace. It's through the bond of peace that we keep unity. And in a world in which we live that loves conflict, we need to be people who choose something different, something unique, something that can only be traced back to God Himself, the Spirit of God that lives inside you as a follower of Christ. See, conflict comes down to you wanting to have your way. And so you fight to be right. And you say hurtful things. And if they win, or they get the upper hand, or hurt you more, then you want revenge. So you keep score instead of keeping the unity of the Spirit. Paul introduces a new way of approaching a conflict. For you, it starts with a question you can ask yourself when a fight breaks out. Here it is. It's not going to be on the screen. You got to listen. Am I fighting to be right, or am I fighting for the relationship? I just want to let that sink in for a minute. When conflict arises, ask yourself, am I fighting now to be right, or am I fighting for this relationship? Here's another way to ask it. Am I choosing to get back at someone, or am I choosing peace for our relationship? Conflict will happen. It's just going to. But at some point, you need to start choosing different responses. Because of conflict, I have seen marriages end. I've seen siblings who could have helped each other and been there for each other. I've seen them destroy each other. I've seen parents or step-parents and teenagers enter into a world of bitterness that I don't think anyone really wants to be a part of. And it's usually because they made the goal winning the argument instead of winning the relationship. Some of you are in crisis mode right now. You're really concerned about winning the argument. You're really concerned about proving you're right, but you're not fighting to save the relationship. This is where we need to allow the scriptures to shape our responses. Let's look back at this verse again, Ephesians 4, verse 3. Paul says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Make every effort to approach conflict differently than everyone else. See, the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit of God in you is one that above everything else guides us to value people by loving them. God cares about unity and peace in our relationships and in our homes. And because of that, He is leading us as His followers to choose peace with each other over winning an argument. So here's the bottom line. Here's that important piece that I always want to give you. If you don't remember anything else I say today, I want you to remember this. Making peace is greater than making a point. If you decide today that you agree that loving your spouse or another family member is better than making a point, then there are some things you can do the next time you face conflict. First, I want to encourage you, challenge you, when conflict arises, to think about you. Think about you. When you're in the middle of conflict, you have to remind yourself, I am valuable. Joseph, where are you going with this? Oh, we'll get there. Remind yourself, I am valuable. I don't need to win this argument to feel important. I already am. And if they win, I won't be any less valuable. See, based on your value, a great next question is, how can I react? How can I respond with humility? How can I practice putting their needs before my own for the sake of our relationship? How can I make an effort to keep peace and make peace? Think about you. You're valuable, whether you win the argument or not. Secondly, think about them. In the same way that you have to remember that you're valuable, you must remember that they are valuable. Your spouse is valuable. Your son or daughter, your parent, your sibling, they're valuable. And because of that, your question is, how can I treat them in a way that shows them that they're valuable? How can I talk to them in a way that communicates, even if I disagree with you, I still think you're valuable. I still value you as a person. I love you. And again, just as we have this whole series, we come back to pre-deciding, making decisions before you find yourself in a situation. The middle of conflict is not the time to decide that the other person or that the relationship is more valuable than making my point. You need to decide today. Some of you needed to decide yesterday before the conflict that making peace is greater than making a point. You need to decide before you find yourself in that moment that you won't unleash the beast, that you won't become the stealth attacker. These things must be decided before conflict arises, because in the middle of a battle, it's too late. So think about this. What if you were right all the time? What if you always proved your point? What if you made your point regardless of what it meant to other people? Then what? Well, you get to make your point. Whoop-de-doo. Good for you. Will your life be any better? Will you have any more joy? Will you enjoy your relationships? No. You'll miss the very thing that God, through Paul, urges you to bring into your relationships, particularly when conflict shows up. Again, here's this big idea that I don't want you to miss. Making peace is greater than making a point. Now, earlier, I shared four different responses to conflict and anger. You remember the Incredible Hulk, the stuffer, the everything is great person, and the stealth attacker. Now, those methods may work for a while. They may help us make it through a conflict here or there. But let's be honest, they aren't exactly setting us up for success in the long run, are they? When conflict knocks on our door and we respond in one of these ways, it always ends up creating more stress in our lives. I can speak to responding as the Incredible Hulk and the stress that that adds to a life. Yes, there will always be conflict. But learning how to respond to conflict may be the very thing that saves our sanity and our relationships. There's a verse in the Old Testament, in the book of wisdom, the book of Proverbs. Solomon writes in Proverbs 29:11, he says, "Fools give vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end." Solomon was the most powerful man in the ancient world at that time. He was rich. He was famous. He could do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. He was king. And I would be willing to bet there were a lot of times that Solomon gave full vent to his rage, that he went total beast mode. But even kings eventually get to a place where they realize that letting their anger and their frustration get the best of them isn't doing them any favors. See, it doesn't really matter if you can get away with your anger, however you interact with it. In the end, you can't get away from the consequences that your anger creates. No matter how you express it, this verse is for you. No matter if you're a Hulk or a stuffer or everything's okay or a stealth attacker, this verse is for you. No matter how you express your anger, it's for you. The foolish are led by their rage. The wise, on the other hand, feel angry, but they don't let it lead them. They don't let it control them. They don't let their anger call the shots. They know that in the end, anger never accomplishes its goal. Peace, as Paul writes about, ultimately brings the outcome we all want. So how do we get to the place where we can feel angry without letting anger call the shots? How do we handle conflict in a way that allows us to feel frustration without it being the thing that decides how we handle the fight? It may sound silly, but as I wrap up, if it helps you remember it when you get home, then I'm okay with it sounding silly. I want you to think of the word peer, P-I-E-R. A peer is a raised structure that goes out over the water. And the pier allows currents and tides to move beneath it while it offers something steady and sturdy over top. So using the four letters of pier, P-I-E-R, there are four things you can practice immediately that will make you better at conflict right away. Like a pier, they'll give you the tools to rise above the conflict and stay steady and sturdy no matter what's going on around you. The P is for pause. See, the problem with anger is that it arrives quickly and it demands an immediate reaction. We've all done something or said something in anger that later on we wish we hadn't. Taking a moment to breathe removes some of anger's power over you. Pause. The I is for identify. Sometimes we get so caught up in the emotion of conflict that we never even take the time to actually figure out what's bothering us. The truth is, our anger is rarely about just one thing. It's usually a combination of several things. So we have to get really good at identifying what's really bothering us. You'll do a better job finding a solution when you can identify the problem. The E stands for express. It's a good thing. It's not bad to communicate when you feel like you've been wronged, as long as you can do it in a healthy way. Once you've calmed down, make the effort to communicate face to face. Text, social media, those allow too much room for misunderstanding. You can't hear the tone that someone uses over a text message. Being able to see someone eye to eye allows you to communicate as clearly as possible. And it may keep you from saying something that you might regret through a text. Face-to-face allows you to see how your words impact someone else. And finally, the R is for release. I know it's not easy, but eventually you have to let it go. If you try to respond in a healthy way and nothing feels resolved the way that you'd like, you have to come to terms with it. Remember, it's not about you being right. It's about bringing peace in a relationship. Make peace with the fact that you did what you could and it didn't go the way you wanted. And now it's time for forgiveness. It's a good time to remember that making peace is greater than making a point. We have to forgive and forgive and forgive again. And releasing someone from what you feel like they owe you, whether they ask you to or not, is ultimately what will bring you peace. Something true about forgiveness is that it takes practice. The good news is, if you're in relationships with other people, and especially in relationships within a family, you'll get lots of chances to get better at it. Finally, conflict is inevitable. The way you handle it will either lead you in a good direction or a bad direction. Certainly, most of us have failed in one way or another when it comes to conflict. We have to learn how to control our anger without letting it control us. We have to learn to not blow up with rage or stuff it inside and just pout or totally ignore it. We have to learn to process it in a way that brings peace instead of taking us to a dangerous place. By the grace of God, by the power of His Spirit inside you, though you fail, you can fail forward in a way that just might save your relationships with those in your life. They're who matter the most. They're valuable, and they're worth fighting for. Let's pray together. Father, I thank you for the scriptures. I thank you for the wisdom of Solomon and Paul, who help us recognize that our conflicts, our arguments, our anger at those in our families, whether it's our spouse or our children or our parents or our siblings or whomever, God, don't let us just try to be right. Give us the strength by the power of your Holy Spirit to fight for peace, to resolve conflict. Help us to recognize that it's not just about being right. Father, help us to value those in our lives more than we value being right and making a point. Work through us and in us to solve the conflicts that are going on even now. And through us, may you be honored and glorified. May we enjoy our relationships with one another when we strive for the unity of the Spirit, when we have peace with one another. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, thanks again for joining us today. If you enjoyed our time together this morning, we would love for you to share it with someone else, invite someone else to watch with you, and We would love for you to ask any questions or send us an email. We'd love to interact with you any way that we might be able to. If you'd like to support the ministries of Next Level Church, you can click on the Give button and complete the form there. We would be honored for you to support our ministry as we live out this mission to raise the reputation of Jesus where we live, work, and play. As we finish our time together this morning, I want to read to you those words. I said I would read the couple of verses before Ephesians 4:3 from the Apostle Paul in prison when he says this, Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. May you, as you walk through whatever conflict may come your way this week, whether in your family or outside of it, may you make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace, and may the Lord strengthen you to do just that." Thanks for watching.